I'd like you to think in a little different form tonight. What if God came in here and sat down? You think it would change what I say and the way I say it? Do you think it would change how you listen? What about when we pray? What if when you closed your eyes and started praying, He was standing literally right in front of you? Would it change how you pray? The fact is, He is. But we are so used to watching TV and talking on the telephone that we have got God in this abstract relationship with us that He is out there somewhere. In fact, most prayers, and I say most, I won't say all of them. Brother Bob's got one of the most honest prayers I've ever heard. You know why that is? It's because he's talking to somebody. He's not formulating a message. Do you understand the difference? Some people, when they pray honestly, it sounds like they're recording an answer machine message. Your call is very important to us, you know. I'm sorry we're not here to take this message. If this is a sales call, please hang up. Don't ever call back again. That's what it honestly sounds like. It sounds like you're formulating a letter. You know why? Because the reality is not there for you. Now, He is here. He's right here. Where two or three are gathered in His name, He is here in the midst. He's not only listening to every word. Sometimes He's entertained by us, just like parents are with their children. Sometimes they're entertained by Him. Other times, you know, they just absolutely enjoy the affection, enjoy the fellowship. But just like you with your children, the one thing you don't really care for is to be ignored by them. You don't want to be treated like, oh, well, you're just around when I need you. And that's the way a lot of us are. Title of this message is Underestimating and Overestimating God. I got started in construction work really early in life. I was about 11 years old, and I had the idea I wanted a sidewalk out in front of a house we were living in. And I said, so I'll just pour me a concrete sidewalk. I said something to my mother. I said, want me to put a sidewalk in out there? You think you can? Yeah, I've seen people pouring concrete before. So I said, I'll go ahead and set up the forms, and you get me some cement, and I'll pour a concrete sidewalk. I didn't want a straight sidewalk. I don't like these square, straight lines. I never have, you know. You can ask my wife, you know, put it in a driveway, make it curve. Then I found out later on in life, you know, that's how God does stuff. He never uses a straight line for anything. Anyway, so I put the thing in. How much is it going to cost? I don't have any clue. How long is it going to take? I don't have any idea. But it's still there, believe it or not. I was back out there, you know, a few years back. Anyway, after I started doing stuff like that, people would ask me to do stuff for them. Can you put in a sprinkler system? Yeah. You ever put one in?
No.
What makes you think you can put one in? If they can, I can. I just started doing all that stuff. But you know one of the first questions they ask you if they ask you to do something? How much is it going to cost? How long is it going to take? I couldn't estimate any of that stuff. Doesn't everything take longer than you think? I've been a professional estimator. My wife says, how long before you're going to be done? I know I'm on the wrong path as soon as I say something, and she just kind of smirks. You'd think by this time in life and being a professional estimator that I'd be able to guess at it a little closer, right? So one of the things you do is you figure out how long it's going to take and then double it. That'll usually get you closer. Anyway, the last year that I estimated stuff was for a company down here in town, and I worked for them for two or three years estimating. The last year I estimated $800,000 worth of business. I was one of 14 estimators. Now, to estimate, that's not just going in there and they says, here's what we want you to do. Here's a set of plans. Give us an estimate. That's not the way it works. Most of the time, they'd get you out on the job site and they say, here's what we need. You tell us how you're going to do it and how much it's going to cost us. And mostly, all they're really interested in is cost. They just want bottom line. So if you're put in a position where you can figure out a better, faster, cheaper way to do it, something that's almost foolproof and then somebody else can't think of it, you can walk in there and make good money. I was competing with people just like me, some of which didn't have the understanding I did, which gave me an advantage. Some of them didn't have the advantage in sales like I had to be able to read the customer, know when to hold them, when to fold them, when to raise the price, when to cut it way down to impress them and get their confidence. Those things were pretty easy. But when you start talking about God and estimating things about God, and that's what you do, whether you actually put it in those terms or not, you begin to think things about God and what he's liable to do and what he would do and what he won't do. What you're doing is you're establishing an estimate of God in his daily actions in regard to you. And what's so horrible about that, he's not like us at all. Look at Isaiah 55. He is so different from us that it's impossible for us with our human understanding to get a hold on him at all. Which means that every time you make a decision about him with your own understanding, you're going to fall flat on your face. Because you cannot estimate something that you don't understand. If you came to me and said, how long is it going to take you to build a videotape deck? I'd be lost, man. I mean, I couldn't even get close because it's something I don't understand. Isaiah 55, verses 6 to 9. Seek ye the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his way and the unrighteous man his thoughts. And let him return unto the Lord, and he will have mercy upon him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, my thoughts than your thoughts. This message is not about making you feel better. This message is not about making you feel bad. This message really isn't about you at all. So you can kind of relax a little bit. In fact, from this point forward in my life, and maybe for the last few months, none of my messages have been really directed toward you. It's our interaction with him, but the primary thrust of every one of those things is attention to him. Now, if it makes you feel bad, if you walk out of here feeling under conviction, don't blame me, because I can't put anybody under conviction. I might be able to make you feel guilty about something, but I can't make you feel conviction. If you feel conviction, it's going to be the one that made you trying to get your attention. Sister Jerry said something tonight when I was sitting there talking to her for a second before church. She said, it's amazing how much of the stuff you've been teaching lately is directly connected to me. I said, it's not just you, sister. God is doing a work in this church. I mean, you may be missing it completely. I don't know what's going on in your life. But I have never seen God in any church that I've been in work in a way where he is orchestrating things like he has been in the last couple of years, where he's working in individual lives, all with the same theme, all at the same time. I've never seen that. And you know what every one of those is doing? It's drawing attention to him and off of ourselves in every single case. It's amazing to me. And I sent out some emails here recently. Sister Vicki was talking about these pictures in the wintertime. You can't help when you look at it, but see the Creator. I mean, that's immediately what you start to realize. You say, man, look at what he can do with just some frozen water. Incredible stuff. That's the stuff that the Lord's been doing around here lately. It hadn't been about building a church. It hasn't been about building a youth department. It hasn't been about building a gymnasium. It hasn't even been about John and Romans and how many we're putting out. What's happened here is the attention is focused on him, and that's where it belongs. That's where it belongs. So it's not about you. It's just attention to him. Let me ask you, do you think it's possible to overestimate God? Brother Jim said the other day when I made that comment, he said, you just lost half of them. Probably lost more than half of them with a comment like that. With everything God's capable of, how can we possibly overestimate him? Oh, it's possible. You think of David. You remember when they were transporting the ark on that cart? You know what he did? He overestimated God's response to his instructions. He said, oh, he won't do that. And then when that guy got killed because he touched the ark, you know what made David mad? He wouldn't have that ark come there for a long time. And then finally, when he broke down and got his mind off of himself, it's like the little kid that gets caught with his hand in the cookie jar and then gets mad because he got caught. That's what happened to David. He just another one of the kids, you know, just like you and me. So he gets his hand caught in the cookie jar and the guy gets killed because of David's foolishness and not paying attention to what God told him about moving that ark. And so then David was feeling really bad about it. You take the ark. I don't want the thing, you know. Finally, when he got right with God, then the ark comes in. Now David's dancing all over the place. You know, he's going crazy, having a great time. You know, that's the way our fellowship is with him. The best moments of your existence will be when you're in fellowship with your Maker. There is nothing that compares with it. Not a thing. It's just like, now everything's right. And then that passes and you get back into life, you know. But anyway, moving along. Have you ever prayed, God, if you'll do this, then I'll do that. You ever think like that? God, if you'll take care of so-and-so, then I'll never do so-and-so again. I'll stop, never do it again. You ever been on that ground? I know you have. There's no thing under the sun. You know, the longer you're saved, the less you do that stuff, because just like Brother Bob says, it don't work. Do you know why you pray those kind of things? You pray them because you overestimate his need for your cooperation. That's right. You get thinking that, well, God wants me to do that, so if I do that, then wrong. You know why? Because that's your understanding. His thoughts are not your thoughts. His ways are not your ways. He is so different from you that you couldn't even get close to it without his help. And if you're ever going to get there, it's going to be by him. If you begin to actually understand him, it's going to be him that does it. And doesn't it sound foolish, you know, for you to overestimate his need for your cooperation? Doesn't that sound foolish? It is foolish. I mean, I speak as a fool, like Paul said. Anytime you're praying like that, now, God, if you let me win this lottery, I'll do such and such for you. What a foolish thing to pray. That's like saying, Dad, if you'll buy me that motorcycle, I'll let you ride it. That's just like that, you know. If you buy me that Maserati when I graduate, I promise I'll take you anywhere you want to go. Anything you can do to leverage your desires. And that's exactly what we try to do. You think he's so gullible that he forgot all the previous broken vows you made to him? And some of those things when you vow to him, Lord, I'll do this, I'll never do that, I promise God, oh God, you know, and stuff like that, and then you did it again. How many times have you had to get back on your face and say, God, I'm just a dirty, rotten liar, and it's killing me. You know, most of those things were over. Most of those things were over sin, weren't they? You know why you couldn't get victory over them? Because you weren't carrying around conviction for it. You were carrying around a sense of guilt, because that sin is gone. And you kept trying to get victory over the flesh. You imagine somebody winning a victory over a tongue and no man can tame it? You think you can quit sinning? Well, then quit fighting so hard and start appreciating the blood more. Quit worrying about that stuff. The Lord took care of it. That's why he died. This thing doesn't depend upon your righteousness. It depends upon his righteousness. Relax. Quit worrying about that stuff. The only thing you got to worry about is the stuff that hinders your fellowship with him. Are your kids always right? Do they always do good? Nope. You know what it takes to restore fellowship with your kids? Just a simple apology and a, Mom or Dad, I love you. Please forgive me. Nope, I can't, because of what you did is so bad, you're going to have to suffer for another 6 months now. That ain't the way it is. And it's not the way God is either. That thing is based on affection. It's not based on the law. The law has been kicked out. It's been overruled, done away with. We're under the age of grace. And we have mercy and grace in time of need. Anyway, you think that God wants us all healthy and happy? Do you think God wants everybody like that? What about you? You think he wants you healthy and happy? I'd like to think so. Oh, look over in John chapter 9. We've been there before, but these are things that would help you to understand more about God. This is about him and understanding him. It's not about us. John chapter 9, verse 1 to 3, "And Jesus passed by and saw a man which was blind from his birth, and his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, Neither hath this man sinned, nor his parents, but that the works of God should be manifest in him." Now you think about that. He wasn't a boy, he was a man. You know what it was to be born blind back then? They didn't have welfare. Somebody born blind basically had no way to communicate with somebody else except through very difficult means. They didn't have all the computer technology they got nowadays. Back then, the guy basically was just out there on his own and begged for what you can get. And they see this guy and they say, "Why was he born blind? Did he sin or his parents?" Isn't that what we think sometimes? Especially if it's somebody you don't like. God finally got them. Yeah, well, be careful. It'll be your turn next. Honestly, what would he do to us if he gave us what we deserve? I'm not talking ridiculous. I'm not talking about, you know, this standard comment that, well, if I got what I deserve, I'd already be in hell, you know, with the door shut, you know, and that kind of stuff. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about as his children, if you got what you deserve as a child of God, what would you get? It wouldn't be an answer to your prayers. He doesn't give us what we deserve. He didn't put us here to live perfect lives. You know what he put us here for? He put us here to choose him. He put us here to desire him. He's going to fix all the rest of it later on. If he wanted to fix it, he'd fix it now. I mean, you'd get saved and say, "Lord, come into my heart and save me for Jesus' sake." And boom, absent from the body, present with the Lord, you'd drop dead right there on the spot. Of course, you know, it'd be kind of tough winning souls like that if everybody had said that prayer died. If he wanted the stuff fixed, he could fix it. Understand this, that the things that you see about God and the way he interacts with his creation, because you don't understand it, he still has purpose behind it. Those things that don't make sense in your mind is because you don't understand him. Those are the things that ought to make you stop and question, "Lord, why are you doing what you do? Why do you let war kill Christians? Why do you let war kill innocent people? Why do you let the terrorists continue to do what they're doing?" Those things that don't make sense to you, he has purpose in them. His ways are not our ways. And really what's most important to you is how he works in your life. I mean, the terrorists, his problem. The problem we have is me and him. That's the ground we need to get squared away. Now, God never changes, does he? So who's going to change if anything's going to get straightened out? Now, if you're content, if you're at ease in Zion and you have no desire to change and you're comfortable where you're at, then, you know, you have no desire and nothing's going to happen. You know why? Like I said, God won't compete for your affection. And if you want to be left alone, he'll leave you alone. Matter of fact, the only way anything's going to happen is for you to go to him. You have to initiate the action because he doesn't change. Anyway, back over there with Paul. He had the same kind of a situation. Look over there in 2 Corinthians 12. This blind guy went through years of suffering just for one moment in time where God could be magnified. Years of suffering, and his parents too. Would you do that to your kids? If you were God, would you create somebody that's blind just so one day you could show up and say, "Okay, be healed," and then they go argue with the priest for one day? Would you do that? No, I wouldn't do it either. How come? That's just not the way I would do things. I'd try to treat them better than that, I would think. You know why he did it? He had purpose beyond your understanding. It's like Brother Kelly, he got all done this morning. I said, "You know why all that stuff is worth it? You know how you know it's worth it?" He said, "How?" I said, "Because God never made a bad deal in his life. God does not get shortchanged. You're bought with a price. It was worth the price. What's amazing is he's the only one that can make it worth the price. But somehow, God couldn't do it without what his son did. And the only way we could get back was that way. And that was the greatest price God ever paid for anything that I know of anywhere." You say, what about past eternity, future eternity? Don't know about those, but everything I know about, there's no question about where that's at on the list. It's right at the top. Anyway, 2 Corinthians 12, 8 and 9. For this thing I besought the Lord thrice, that it might depart from me. And he said unto me, My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, would I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Now, you guys have heard this stuff about Paul's thorn in the flesh over and over and over, right? How many of you know why he had that thorn in the flesh? It's right in the previous verses, and it's so crystal clear you couldn't miss it. You know what the problem is? Laodicean church misses all that stuff because they're not trying to understand God. That's why. They go down there and they grab the stuff, my grace is sufficient for thee. That's going to answer why all the people in my church are not getting their prayers answered and things are tough. You know, my grace is sufficient for thee. There was purpose behind that stuff. If God is not answering your prayers and you're condemned to have to trust his grace and live on his grace because he won't take it away, there is purpose behind it. It is not by accident. It's not like, okay, I got the short straw. I guess I just have to be the one to suffer. God doesn't work like that. Let's go back here to these other previous verses and see what God does and why he does it. Verse 1. It is not expedient for me, doubtless, to glory. I will come into visions of revelations of the Lord. I knew a man in Christ above 14 years ago, whether in the body I cannot tell, or whether out of the body I cannot tell. God knoweth. Such a one caught up to the third heaven. What Paul's saying there is something happened, and he's talking about himself in the first person abstractly. I knew a man. But it gets real clear who it is further on. God took him, put him up in the third heaven, and let him see things. And Paul said, I couldn't tell if I was there in the flesh or not. But I saw all of this stuff. Everything that was there, I saw it. You know, kind of like the people that say they die in the operating room, and they go up and they see their body and all the people working around the operating room, and then back in the body, you know, wake up in the recovery room, stuff like that. He said, were you in the body or not? Well, I wasn't because I could see my body. Well, Paul wasn't looking at his body. He said, when did that happen? Probably out there when they stoned him. Probably. Maybe not, but probably so. Verse 4. How that he was caught up into paradise and heard unspeakable words which is not lawful for man to utter. Of such a one will I glory, yet of myself I will not glory, but in mine infirmities. For though I would desire to glory... What is that? If you've been to heaven, wouldn't you want to tell people? Wouldn't you want to tell them everything you saw? Wouldn't you? You know how many of you could have kept your mouth shut? Exactly. So what happens? Verse 6, though I would desire to glory, I shall not be a fool, for I will say the truth. But now I forbear, lest any man should think of me above that which he seeth me to be, or that he heareth of me, and lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations, there was given me a thorn in the flesh. You know what that is? That's a failure of anybody trying to understand God, and so they major on grace, grace. Oh, we want relief, because it's all about self. They miss that because they're not trying to understand God at all. If we're going to understand God working in our lives, those are some of the things that we're going to have to be able to get a hold of. And if we don't, it'll be our own fault. Anyway, when you pray, do you pray for His will? Do you? Day by day, you know. Help me, Lord, when toil and trouble meeting, so to take as from a Father's hand. Have you ever prayed like that? Or are all your prayers just for relief? Do you really want God's will? Do you? You know what that might mean? You do now, don't you? You see, that's kind of serious ground. So, Lord, I think I'd just rather remain ignorant. Let him which is ignorant be ignorant still. No. You're not going to be right until you're right with God. You know why Paul could later on say, look at this. Verse 10, therefore I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distress for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I'm strong. What's that all about? Verse 9. Gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. You know what he said? Man, I've experienced it, and it's worth it. That's why he could glory in his infirmities. It had to do with stuff that he saw, and keeping his mouth shut, and keeping him humble. That's what it was all about. And so God says, okay, I'm going to show you this. Now, smackdown time. Why? Because if I don't have something hanging on you the whole time to keep you reminded, you're going to forget, you're going to open your mouth. And what you're going to say is not lawful for man to utter, and your ministry will be over. And yet, even with that much understanding, he went back and he besought the Lord thrice. Why? Because every time he was praying, he was thinking of himself. As soon as he got his attention off of himself and on the Lord, then it was, oh, wait a minute, this is great. Now I got relief. That's the way it is. In acceptance, there is peace. You want to keep fighting God? You'll lose. You'll lose. You want to know why you're miserable sometimes and you can't get peace? Not sufficient for you? He's not going to give you grace to fight him. That's like helping out your enemy. You're fighting against me. The kid's wrestling, fighting with you while you're trying to discipline him, you know? Well, here, let me help you, kid. I'll release my grip just a little bit and let you fight me harder. Here, let me put you up on the stool so when you hit me, you won't be hitting my legs. You can get my face. You think God's going to do that? My grace is sufficient for thee. In what? In his will. When you don't have grace, you better start checking some of that stuff. If you mean it when you pray, thy will be done, you better be ready for both sides. If you're ready for both sides and then he gives you a blessing, you know how much different that's going to be? If that kid comes to you and said, can I have such and such, but I don't want it if you don't want me to have it, and you get it for that kid, you know what a difference that attitude's going to be? That attitude will be, you really did it for me. It wasn't because I asked. Anyway, what we should do, in contrast to all of this, is we should actually put forth an effort to learn of him by what he shows us. You know, I always overestimate God in the way he treated his creation. Always have. He said, what are you talking about? I think about his disciples. Wouldn't you think he'd have treated his disciples better than he did in the end of their life? Hung upside down on crosses, beheaded, burnt, exiled. You know why? Because his ways are not our ways. His thoughts are not our thoughts. He has an understanding and a grasp of reality that escapes us. We think as long as we're living and we're happy, everything's okay. That's the best thing that can happen. And it's not. You know, the best thing that can happen to you is God put you in a position. Now, this is the best thing that can happen. I hate to tell you this. Greater love hath no man than this, than a man lay down his life for his friends. Would you deny Christ if they put you on the spot? Oh, man, I'd like to think not. That's where you really need the grace. There are some of them things in the Fox's Book of Martyrs. We were talking about that the other night. Just amazing. That one girl, man, she is Catholic, and she renounced the Catholic Church and all that stuff. They're going to burn her at the stake, so they put her up there, and the flames started coming up. She's burning, man. Fire's coming up all around her. She looks out there at the priest or the bishop or whoever he was doing the whole thing, and she says, behold, you papists, you're always looking for a miracle, you know, Mary's face here, Mary's face there, and all the rest of that nonsense. You're always looking for a miracle. These flames to me are as sweet as a bed of roses. They were. They were. Now that's something, man. That's God really dealing with those things. Now, I don't want to have to go that way. You know, I want to go by the rapture. Matter of fact, you know, he can come right now. There's nothing down here holding me anymore. The sooner the better. Don't judge God by yourself or your desires. That's hard not to do. You know that, don't you? How you feel really affects your prayer life. If you're in pain, you pray more seriously. If you really love somebody that's hurting, that affects your prayer life. But don't judge him by those things. You're going to have to get beyond that. Try to understand his feelings and his desires. Now, overestimating is just a little bit of a loss. If you overestimate a job, you just lose the job. But you know, underestimating that job is a whole lot worse, man. You underestimate a job and catastrophic results. One guy underestimated a job one of the boss's sons. He got a set of drawings for this big commercial job, you know, in a several-story building. He took all that ductwork off and laid it all out and put it into the cut sheet and ran it through the shop, manufactured all that stuff, fabricated it because they knew that they wouldn't have any time to do it. Once the job got to a certain point, they had to get in there and get it done so the ceiling men could finish that job on time. Those things carry some hefty penalties, man. You're looking at $10,000, $20,000 a day if you don't get it done. So he got all that stuff all finished, and they rolled out on that job the first day with that ductwork, and the guy had taken it off on the wrong scale. You know what that means? That means he took it off with something like a quarter of an inch to the foot, and it was actually 1/8 of an inch to the foot, so everything was half its size and half its length. And no wonder he got the job. You know what that'll do to a company? That'll put them out of business real quick. I mean, they just file bankruptcy and close the shop doors. Either that or they lose a lot of their profit. Now, the lost, they got a real problem. So how's that? It's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of a living God. And he gets real serious about that stuff over in Proverbs. He talks about he's going to mock when your fear cometh upon you. He talks about another place he's going to have the heathen in derision. The one that made them. The one who allowed his son to die for them. When their time comes, he's going to make fun of them. In their absolute terror. Now that's God. You don't hear that kind of stuff. You know why? Because people don't want to think about God in the terms that he really exists in. They want to keep God in that box. They want to keep God in this image they have in their mind of him. Sweet, loving, tender, gentle. He's all of those things, but he's everything else too. He is everything. The full spectrum from one end to the other. And if you just pick out the stuff based on how you feel and your desires, you'll never understand him. You'll just bring that thing down to where every decision you make will be based on your understanding and every one of them will be in error. You'll continually overestimate him and underestimate him. Anyway, let's get back to Isaiah 55:6-9 real quick. We'll wrap this up. Isaiah 55:6-9. Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. Calling on him while he's near, what does that have to do with anything? The Lord is nearer than he's ever been in my life. You say, is he this way everywhere? I don't know. You know, I'd like to think so. I made a comment a while back that in the last days he'll pour out his spirit upon all flesh. It's not like the spirit wasn't there. He just increases it. He increases the activity. Now maybe it's getting close for the Lord to come back. I think we're living in the last days. I think we're living in the last minutes. I really do. But if he's that close, and if we only have that much time left, then take advantage of what you've got. Call upon him while he is near. You say, what are we going to call on him about? Been over it before, but let's go to Matthew 11. Matthew chapter 11. We've only read part of this. Once again, it's because most of the stuff that we read, the Laodicean church has reformatted this stuff, so the only part of it you get is the stuff that affects you. You're only looking at it for what I get out of it. How do my feelings and my desires, how are they benefited from this passage of Scripture? You know, what's in it for me is the mentality. Look at Matthew 11 and start with verse 25. Paragraph. At the time, Jesus answered and said, I thank thee, O Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because thou hast hid these things from the wise and prudent, and hast revealed them unto babes. Even so, Father, for so it seemeth good in thy sight. All things are delivered unto me of my Father, and no man knoweth the Son but the Father. Neither knoweth any man the Father save the Son, and he to whomsoever the Son will reveal him. Come unto me, all you that labor and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Do you understand what the key to that whole thing is? It has to do with verse 27, and it has to do with learn of me. Why? Because God delivered all that knowledge to Jesus Christ. And if you're ever going to get it, he says, to whomsoever the Son will reveal him. That's where it's at. If you're going to get that, you're going to get that through the ministry of Jesus Christ and the Comforter that Jesus Christ sent to you. That's where it's going to come from. Now, if you want to know more about him, you're going to have to call upon him. It's going to be a matter of you bring the desire to the table, and then he'll start filling in the blanks. If you don't have any desire, you're going to be like them guys sitting outside of the gates. Instead of saying, "Why sit we here until we die?" you'll just say, "Why should we bother getting up? It ain't worth the effort. I'm content." Well, that's fine. I mean, I wouldn't criticize anybody for doing what I did for all those years. But now that you've got a little bit of light, now that you've got a little bit of understanding, you can get beyond where you're at. You can learn of him and enjoy the purpose of your existence, your salvation, and your future. And it isn't just to fulfill your needs and make you feel better. It's to actually get in tune with the reason you were created. And the reason you were created was to bring him glory. And like I said before, the more you function in his desire and his will, the more you justify everything he's done for you. And the more it brings him glory because you're doing what you were made to do. Just like Job when he said, "There's nobody on earth like that one." Why? He's doing what I want him to do. That's what made him great. It made him great because he was doing God's will. All right, Brother Joe, you can come on up here and close right here in a word of prayer.